Greta's lips curl up. Be careful what you borrow from that man's wife. Something about her expression makes me very uneasy. He said it was fine. It was his idea. Of course it was. She scoffs. I'm just saying, Rosalie will not be happy about handing over a pair of her boots so that her husband can help a pretty young guest. Her eyes narrow at me. She's always watching him, you know. I think of the shadow in the window of the house across from the motel. My breath catches. There's nothing to be jealous of, believe me. Tell that to Christina Marsh. My throat goes dry. What is she saying? Is she implying that Rosalie Baxter had something to do with the death of that girl in room 201? But no, that's crazy. Nick said that his wife is sick. She's ill. She's not going around murdering anyone. Of course, he didn't say what she was sick with. What if she's mentally ill? I shake my head. This is ridiculous. I'm going to be gone within the hour. I don't need to think about Nick's crazy wife. And Greta is just trying to scare me. Nick said she had a flair for the dramatic. It'll be fine, I say to Greta. It was nice meeting you. Not really. The expression on the old woman's face is unreadable. Nice meeting you too, Kelly. With those words, Greta slams the door in my face. I hear the locks clicking into place behind the door. Even though she and I are the only people here, and Nick, of course, I wonder why she feels she needs all those locks. As I walk down the hall, I pass room 201. That's where it happened. That's where a girl was murdered 2 years ago. I wonder what it must have been like to discover her. Nick would have opened the door with his master key, then found her lying on the bedspread, the fabric stained with her blood. Surely he had to throw out the bedspread. I now know how hard it is to get blood out. I shiver. I don't need to think about this anymore. After today, I'm never going to see the Baxter Motel ever again. As promised, Nick is waiting for me on the first floor. He's got on a heavy black coat and a black beanie on his head. When he grins at me, he looks sort of adorable. Derek was undeniably handsome, but I always preferred guys like Nick. Those boy next door good looks. Got you some boots. He holds up a pair of black fur-lined snow boots. This will keep you warm. Thanks. I reach for the boots, but then I hesitate. Are you sure it's okay if I borrow them?
Yeah.
He bobs his head.
Of course. She never wears them anymore anyway. You could probably just, you know, have them.
There is no way I am taking his wife's boots, but I'll wear them until I get my car free. When I get outside the motel and see all the snow, I feel sick. Nick wasn't exaggerating. This looks like way more than 2 feet of snow. In some areas, it looks like 10 feet of snow. And I'm driving a Corolla, not a pickup truck. How in the hell am I going to get out of here? Wow, I mumble. I didn't realize how bad it was. He nods.
What sort of car do you have?
A Corolla. His eyes widen.
Well, this will be a challenge.
To his credit, he still seems game to help me. Rosalie's boots sink into the deep white powder as we make our way very slowly over to the diner where I parked my car. When I explain that we have to walk all the way around the restaurant to my parking spot, Nick seems a bit surprised. But he goes along with it without questioning me why I would do something like that. He's got a shovel, and I've got one in the trunk of my car. But with each step, I'm realizing how impossible this is going to be. We are going to need to shovel the length of a football field to get me out of here. When we get around the side of the restaurant, Nick squints into the whiteness.
Where is your car? I don't see it. I don't see it either. Shit, where did my car go? But then I see the big mound of snow behind the dumpster, and I notice a little patch of the blue side mirror. That's my car. It's just been buried. I would have hoped the restaurant might shield it from some of the snow, but this seems more consistent with my luck recently.
It's over there, I say.
Nick nods, and we make our way over to that immense pile of snow that buried my car last night. When we get there, he has to steady himself on the hood of my car.
Jesus, this is a lot of snow, he comments.
Thanks for helping me, I say.
Yeah,
he breathes.
Well, let's get to it.
He helps me clear off the trunk so that I can pop it open and get my own shovel as well as the ice scraper, a crucial tool for any New England winter. And then the two of us get to work. It's slow going. There is a lot of snow on my car, and surrounding my car, and surrounding the area surrounding my car. I'm seriously discouraged, but Nick doesn't complain. He just keeps shoveling snow around my car.
Thanks for your help, I say. Really, I appreciate it so much.
He flashes me a smile.
No problem. Happy to help.
I'm sure most owners of motels don't help their guests shovel snow. He laughs.
Well, we're a full-service motel.
He blinks up at me.
And if you need to stay longer, you're welcome to. We can, you know, work out a discount rate or something.
He's figured out money is tight for me. But the reason I'm not staying has nothing to do with the money. And anyway, from the looks of his crumbling motel, he's in no position to be offering anyone a discount.
Thanks, I mumble.
And the food won't be any better, he continues cheerfully, but at least there's plenty of it. Like that joke about the restaurant where the customers complain the food is so terrible, and then they say, and the portions are so small.
When I don't crack a smile, he adds,
you know, because why would you want a big portion if the food is terrible, right?
I nod. Yeah. He clears his throat.
Sorry, I'm just trying to get you to cheer up. I don't think I told that joke very well.
I manage a very tiny smile just for his sake. I'm not feeling it, though.
Don't worry about it. Whatever food you give me is fine.
Like I said, my wife was the cook.
Again, he's talking about her in the past tense.
It's just hard for her now.
Despite the cold, I wipe some sweat off my brow. Shoveling is hard work. On top of everything else, I'm going to be sore in all my muscles tomorrow.
So, this was her restaurant?
Nick glances behind him at the boarded-up building.
Yeah, it was. That was always her dream, to have her own restaurant. And for a while, it was doing really well. Really, really well. Considering it's just a tiny rest stop on the side of the road.
What happened? I blurt out.
He looks surprised by my question. Maybe I shouldn't have asked, but we've been shoveling for over an hour. We've bonded through our manual labor.
Well, he says, she got sick.
He hesitates a moment.
She has MS, multiple sclerosis. She has this progressive subtype, and it's just been downhill the last 5 years. She can't even walk anymore, and I've been mostly taking care of her.
Oh, no, I murmur. That's terrible. I'm so sorry.
But there's a part of me that's relieved he didn't confess his wife has paranoid schizophrenia. Instead, she is too impaired to even leave her house. It doesn't sound like there's any reason to be afraid of her, even if she's the jealous type.
I wanted her to keep running the restaurant,
he says.
I said we could pay to modify the kitchen so she could use it in the wheelchair. But she never wanted to. She's just stuck on wanting to do things the way she's always done them, and if she can't...
People can be stubborn. He nods.
I get that it's hard for her. I'm not saying I would have taken it well if the same thing happened to me. But she could still do everything she used to do if she wanted to. Instead, she doesn't want to do anything anymore. She just stays in the house all day, even though she's going crazy in there.
It's driving me crazy.
I flash him a sympathetic look, thinking of Derek. We all go a little crazy sometimes.
Right, but...
He puts down the shovel for a moment and looks off in the distance at his small house.
It's a lot. On me, it's hard.
I get it. I bite my lip. Have you ever thought maybe she would be better off at another place somewhere? There's a sudden flash of anger in his mild brown eyes.
Another place? You mean like a nursing home? Well, she's my fucking wife.
His gloved hand turns into a fist.
She's only 35. I'm not sticking her in a nursing home. Are you kidding me? What kind of person do you think I am?
I take a step back, my grip tightening around the shovel. I'm sorry. I didn't mean it like that. I was just... I didn't even realize I was holding my breath until Nick's shoulders sag.
No, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have jumped on you. You didn't mean any harm. I shouldn't have been complaining. It's my fault.
I'm shocked how quickly the fight went out of him. If this were Derek, it would have been the start of him screaming at me for hours and mentally torturing me for days. When I dared tell him once that his mother's casserole was too salty, he changed the locks on the front door so I couldn't get in the next day, and believe me, that casserole was essentially a salt lick. It's okay, I say. You probably don't get to talk to people much out here.
That's for sure.
He smiles crookedly.
Anyway, thanks for listening. We're relatively happy out here. I mean, things could be better, but it could be worse too, right?
Sure, I say. You could be on the run after killing your husband, or maybe you didn't kill him and he's coming after you. So yes, things could be worse.
Oh, hey,
he says.
I think that's my phone ringing.
I don't hear anything.
It's on silent. I feel it buzzing.
He pulls off his right glove, revealing pink fingers. He digs around in his pocket and pulls out his phone.
Hey, Rosie. What's wrong?
I watch his expression change as his wife speaks to him. He turns and takes a few steps away from the car. His voice is lower this time, but I can still barely make it out.
I'm just helping her dig out her car.
He murmurs.
She's stuck in the...
He ducks his head down.
No, Rosie, come on, that's not...
He lets out a long sigh.
What do you want me to do? I have to help.
I wince. Greta was right. It looks like I've gotten him into trouble with his wife. He lowers his voice a few more notches, and now I'm having trouble hearing him. Finally, he hangs up the phone. For a moment, he looks annoyed, but then he shakes it off. Sorry if I got you into trouble, I say. He waves his hand.
It's fine. Do you want to try the car? See if you can get it going?
I look doubtfully at my Corolla. We have gotten all the snow off of the car, but we're still basically sitting in an ocean of snow. How am I supposed to drive out of here? But I'm willing to give it a try. I don't have to get that far. I slide into the driver's seat. I thought it would be a bit warmer inside the car, but somehow it's even colder. I say a Hail Mary, stick the key in the ignition, and I'm relieved when the engine turns over. I was worried the car died overnight. But then I hit the gas, and the car doesn't budge. I roll down the window. It's not moving at all. Nick nods thoughtfully.
Okay, put it back in park. Let me dig your wheels out a little more, then we'll try again.
I wait patiently while he digs my wheels out. After a few minutes, he motions to me to try the car again. This time the wheels move forward. I cheer internally for about 2 seconds, then I'm stuck again. My wheels are spinning, but I'm not going anywhere. I push down harder on the gas, but it's not enough.
Damn it,
I cry. Nick frowns.
I'm sorry, Kelly. I just don't think it's going to be possible for me to dig you a trail from here back to the main road. It's pretty far.
I know, I mumble.
And like I said, the snowplows will be here this afternoon.
I'll make sure they plow around the restaurant so you can get out.
There's nothing I can do about it. We are snowed in until the plow comes. And God knows when that will be. He claims it will be in the afternoon, but when? How many hours am I going to sit around a sitting duck in a motel room? And that's when the tears jump into my eyes.
Kelly?
Nick bends down beside the window.
Are you okay?
I do my best to wipe the tears away, but he knows what's happening. I'm okay. I have to be somewhere.
I wish I could take you, but my Ford would do even worse than your car.
I blink, unable to keep the tears from spilling over. It wouldn't help if Nick drove me somewhere anyway. I can't leave my car behind. I at least need it for a trade-in. It's fine. Nick is quiet for a moment, standing outside the car. He rifles around in his pocket, and I think he's going for his phone, but then he pulls out a wad of tissues. He hands them to me.
They're clean. I promise.
I accept the tissues, wiping my eyes off and struggling to get myself back under control. I can't let myself lose it. This isn't that big a deal. If the roads are snowed in, hopefully the police won't be looking for me too hard either. I've got a few hours. Maybe the plow will come early. I get out of the car, and we trudge back to the hotel together. He's still got the bucket set up on the floor in front of the main counter. I guess he never got around to fixing that leak in room 201. I notice now that the water dripping from the ceiling doesn't look clear the way water usually does. It has a brownish tinge, almost reddish. I wonder if that's from rust. It makes sense that the pipes would be rusty here.
I'm going to wait for a plumber,
Nick says when he sees me looking at the dripping water.
I gave it a go this morning and, well, I'm not having much luck. I think I need a professional, you know?
I nod. I look at the water accumulating in the bucket. It definitely looks red. That's so strange. I'm going up to my room, I say. I'm going to lie down a bit. All that shoveling made me tired.
Sure.
He goes behind the counter and sits down.
I'm going to catch up on some paperwork, but call me if you want me to make you lunch.
I almost make a joke about big portions, but it dies on my tongue. I'm not in the mood for making jokes right now. I'm also not in the mood for eating. I'll let the boots dry out on the radiator, then I'll bring them down to you later, I tell him. He shrugs.
You may as well keep them. Like I said, Rosie can't walk anymore anyway. She doesn't need them.
I raise an eyebrow. So she's okay with you just giving them to me? He opens his mouth, but he doesn't say anything right away.
Yeah, you're right. You should probably give them back.
I feel guilty about the wet footprints I leave on the stairs as I tromp back up to my room. Maybe it's the weight of the boots, but the stairs are even creakier this time around. I wouldn't be surprised if they just collapsed in one gigantic pile of rubble. As I walk back to my room, I pass room 201. I don't know what it is, but every time I walk by this room, I get the chills. The door is closed, and there is a do not disturb sign hanging from the doorknob, even though the room is empty. I press my ear against the door. It's silent inside. I reach out my hand and brush my fingers against the door. On an impulse, I lower my hand onto the doorknob, and I try to turn it. Chapter 11.
He keeps it locked.
I nearly jump 10 feet in the air at the sound of Greta's voice. I don't know how long she's been watching me from that little crack between her door and the doorframe. I yank my hand off the doorknob. Sorry, I mumble. She arches one of her white eyebrows at me.
Do not apologize to me. Nick and Rosalie Baxter own this motel. I do not care what you do.
I wipe my hands on my jeans. I was just
curious.
I guess.
I don't want to talk about the strange leak coming from the ceiling right below room 201. Anyway, Greta blinks at me.
You should join me. I'm about to have lunch.
That's when I notice quite a nice smell emanating from Greta's room. A minute ago, I had no appetite whatsoever. But the smell of something actually appetizing reminds me it's time for lunch. And whatever Greta made is much better than another turkey sandwich. Or some brown eggs. Are you sure? I ask.
I would not invite you if I did not want you to come.
That is true. I drop off my coat and boots in my room. Then I head to room 202 to join Greta for lunch. Of course, the second I walk into her room, I'm reminded of why it gave me the creeps last time I was here. If I had remembered all the mirrors, I might have said no. She has a small table set up in front of her bed. I sit down on the edge of the bed and watch as she scoops what looks like a dark brown stew onto a nest of egg noodles. Is that goulash? I ask.
No,
she says.
This is porkult.
Porkult? She shakes her head vigorously.
No, porkult.
I'm never going to say it right, so I just nod. She is heaping an enormous amount of stew onto my plate, easily enough for three people. She plops it down in front of me, along with a slightly bent fork. It's a lot of food, I comment.
Yes, you are too skinny. Eat it all.
If I tried to eat all this food, I would probably vomit it up immediately after. But I'm not going to argue. I dip my fork into the food and spear a hunk of meat. I lift it to my mouth and take a tentative bite. This is good.
Why are you so surprised?
It's just, I take another bite. Maybe I could eat the whole plate. Where did you make this? You couldn't have made it in this room.
I made it in the kitchen. Nick lets me use it, and he takes me out to the grocery store once a week. I do not care for his cooking, and he does not care to cook.
I take another bite. This is fantastic. It's got this rich stew flavor, and then a hint of paprika. If I made this at home, Derek would... Oh, God. What am I thinking? I'm not making any meals for Derek again. Ever. So, what was it like working at a carnival? I ask.
It was a living.
She shrugs as she settles down next to me with her own heaping plate of stew. I don't know how she eats so much when she's so tiny.
I have a gift, so it was my obligation to share it.
What is your gift, exactly? She smiles thinly.
You are skeptical.
I shrug.
It runs in my family.
She stirs the food on her plate.
We all have an ability to see beyond what is visible to the naked eye. I can see past, present, and future.
I chew on a hunk of meat. I have no idea what animal this is, but it's delicious.
Mmm. You should let me tell your fortune.
I'd rather not.
Why not? You do not believe in it anyway, so do it for a laugh, yes?
I nod at the dresser where I saw the tarot cards. So you use tarot cards or a crystal ball or... She waves a hand dismissively.
Those are just ornaments for putting on a show.
She taps her temple.
The real gift is in here.
Did you tell Nick's fortune? I ask. She takes a bite of the stew.
I did.
And? She clucks her tongue.
Whatever happens during a session is private. But I will tell you this. He did not believe his fortune. And that was to his detriment. Also, I will tell you.
She leans in close enough that I can smell wine on her breath.
If Christina Marsh had listened to her fortune, she would still be breathing today.
A hunk of meat feels like it has gotten lodged in my throat. I think I'll pass on the fortune-telling. She shrugs.
That is your choice. But even if you do not know your fortune, that does not keep it from coming true.
If you know your fortune, are you able to stop it? Or do you have to just try to look surprised when it happens?
In some cases, people may alter their destinies, she says, but it is rare. Most people simply allow it to happen, like Christina.
I want to roll my eyes at her because it's all so ridiculous. But there's something about this woman. Something about her strange room and her eye socks and her beef stew that is the best thing I've ever tasted in my life. If anyone can tell the future, it's this woman. And that's all the more reason for me to refuse. Chapter 12. I spend nearly 2 hours in Greta's room. She tells me more about her time in the carnival. She's actually quite entertaining. She has me laughing out loud at the story about how the carnies fought the mandatory daily shower rule by having a shower strike that lasted a grueling 2 months.
By the end, Greta says, I had to walk around with a clothespin on my nose. Have you ever tried to read somebody's palm with a clothespin on your nose?
I can't say I have, I say.
I do not recommend it.
Did you have your own room there? She adjusts her billowy white nightgown.
I shared a room with Bernie. He was my husband.
Oh, I swallow. I didn't realize you were... She continues to play with the fabric of her nightgown.
We met at the carnival. I was only 19 when I met him. I didn't speak much English. He taught me. We were together for over 30 years.
Was he psychic too? She smiles distantly.
Oh, no. He did not have the gift. He would run games or rides for them or whatever they needed. We were not blessed with any of our own, but he loved the children who came to the carnival. He loved seeing the smiles on their faces. And then...
I bite the inside of my cheek. What?
One morning, he did not wake up. The doctors said it was his heart.
One side of her lips quirks up, although her eyes are wet.
Bernie liked his corn dogs and curly fries. You did not have to be a psychic to know it would do him in. But I am grateful for the years we had together.
I feel an irrational stab of envy. I can see on Greta's face how much she loved this man. I never felt that way about Derek. I'm not sure if I'll ever feel that way about a man. Somehow, true love has eluded me. Maybe I'm immune to it.
Do not worry.
Greta's voice breaks into my thoughts.
You will find love. I promise you.
I cock my head to the side. Is that what you see in my future?
No. You are young and beautiful. Some things are simply obvious.
Right. But she does not know my past. She does not know what I'm running away from. If she knew, she might not be so optimistic about my future. The thought of what I left behind makes Greta's delicious lunch churn in my stomach. I should not be sitting here chit-chatting with an old woman. I've got to get back on the road. I look down at my watch. I should check in with Nick. Maybe the plow has arrived.
No, it has not.
But maybe
I am able to hear the plow through my window. Trust me, it has not arrived.
I wipe my hands on my jeans and get to my feet. I better get going anyway. But thank you for lunch. Would you like me to bring the plates downstairs to the kitchen?
No, please don't bother yourself. Nick will fetch them later.
She arches an eyebrow.
Are you sure you will not let me read your fortune?
I hesitate. It was a firm no before, but I've gotten to know Greta. I like her, and she seems to really want to do this. So, why not? It's better than sitting around my room, pacing back and forth as I wait for the plow to arrive. Okay, I say.
Sure,
go for it. Greta smiles at me.
You will not regret this.
That remains to be seen. She reaches out to the dim yellow lamp by her bed. And now the room is strictly mood lighting. I am sitting beside her on the bed, and she reaches out to take my hands in hers. Her skin feels so delicate, like tissue paper.
Relax your mind,
she instructs me. How do I relax my mind?
Clear out all thoughts. Make your mind blank.
Easier said than done. Okay. She closes her eyes, but I keep mine open. She tilts her head back and her eyelids flutter.
Yes, you are very accessible to read. You are an open book.
Oh, wonderful.
I see.
Her eyelids flutter again.
There is a man in your past. A very handsome man.
Yes. I'm not impressed quite yet. There are plenty of handsome men out there.
Yes, yes.
Her fingers apply pressure to mine.
He was somebody you loved. But you don't love him anymore. He is...
My breath catches in my throat, and I'm suddenly hanging on her every word.
You are frightened of this man.
Her eyes crack open.
You feel he means to bring you harm.
I swallow.
Well, but the question is,
she goes on,
will he? What lies in the future for you and the handsome man?
The pressure of her fingers on mine grows uncomfortable. I want to pull my hands away, but I don't dare break the spell. Suddenly, she lets go of my hands and jumps away from me like I'm made of fire. Her eyes fly open.
You must go.
What? I stare at her uneasily. What are you talking about? She takes a step back, like she's almost afraid of me.
You go now. You are danger.
I stand up, my legs trembling beneath me. You mean I'm in danger?
I'm sorry.
She backs up again until she hits the wall, or the mirror, as it were.
You must go now, Quinn. Go, get out of here.
But
get out,
she shrieks.
You must go. Get away from this place.
The veins are standing out in her neck and her eyes are bulging out in their sockets. I don't even understand what's happening. Why is she freaking out like this? It was her idea to tell my fortune. I'm afraid she's going to start throwing things at me, so I obediently stumble out of her room. For a moment, I linger in the hallway, stunned. Was that for real? Or was it all a performance, like Nick said? I can't even tell. Then something hits me. She called me Quinn. Somehow, she knew my name. All right, now I'm officially freaked out. I definitely never told her my name. I said I was Kelly, and she called me on it being a fake name, but I never corrected her. So how did she know my name is Quinn? I close my eyes, and I can still see her panicked face, the veins standing out in her neck and on her temples, screaming at me, "Go! Get out of here!" What does she think is going to happen if I stay here? What horrible thing did she see in my future? This is ridiculous. She has to tell me the truth. This isn't fair. I knock on her door. Then I knock a second time. Then a third. Okay, she's obviously not answering. I have a sick, horrible feeling in my stomach. I don't know what she saw in my future or if any of this is real, but I agree with her on one thing. I need to get out of this place. Now. I'll go sit in my car until the plow gets here if I have to. I return to my room and throw everything back into my luggage. It doesn't take very long. Regretfully, I leave the boots behind in the room. I'll have to do what I can with my sneakers. As I take one last look at the room, I look out the window at the house across the way. The sun is still up, so it's hard to see, but I can just barely make out the shadow of a woman sitting in the window on the second floor. Rosalie. I wonder why she's on the second floor. If she can't walk, why wouldn't she want to stay on the first floor? Why would she trap herself upstairs? I shake my head. There's no point in thinking about this anymore. Nick's wife isn't my problem anymore, and I'm sure she'll be happy I'm gone. I take the stairs down as quickly as I can go. It's hard with my bulky luggage, but I need to get out of here. I've got this horrible feeling I don't have much time. Nick is at the front desk when I come down. He sucks in a breath when he sees me with my luggage.
What are you doing, Kelly?
I have to go. He frowns.
But the plow isn't here yet. I told you I would call you when they came.
I can't wait anymore. I heave my bag onto my shoulder. I have to get out of here. I'll wait in the car until they arrive.
But it's freezing out there. What are you going to do? Run the heat for the next 2 hours? Your car is going to die.
He has a reasonable point. But I can't stay here. Maybe they'll be here sooner.
No, they won't. They called me and told me they're delayed. They might not be here for hours.
I'm struggling not to burst into tears. Well, I can't stay here.
Why not?
Because I let my heavy bag drop onto the floor. Greta told me that. She read my fortune and said that I'm in danger. Nick just stares at me for a moment. Then he bursts out laughing.
Are you serious? I'm sorry, but really? That's not really why you're leaving, is it?
It was... I dig my thumbnail into my palm. It was creepy. She seemed to know things about me, and she even seemed freaked out. It felt real.
Well, it wasn't, believe me.
But
it wasn't real.
He says it with such conviction, it's hard not to believe him.
She's a performer. That's what she used to do for many years. She's not psychic. Come on, Kelly. That's crazy.
It felt real, I insist. He shrugs.
That's because she's good at it. You know what she does? It's called cold reading. She told me about it once. She watches you as she says things and looks for subtle cues in your facial expression and body language that tell her she's on the right track. She did it for a living for 30 years. She's really good at it.
I don't know.
Yeah, but I know, and I'm telling you. That's what she does.
I look down at my luggage next to my sneakers. I want to believe that was all a performance. I don't want to go sit in my cold car waiting for that plow to come.
It's very easy,
Nick insists.
Even I could do it. Watch.
He shuts his brown eyes and massages his temples with his fingertips.
I'm looking into your past. I'm seeing a man, a very attractive man, your husband.
I stare at him. That's exactly what she said. The left side of his lips quirks up.
Right. Well, you came in here wearing a wedding ring, and obviously you think your own husband is attractive, so...
Yes, but... He massages his temples again.
And now I'm seeing a horrible fight between you. something terrible, and now you're running away.
I take a step back. How did you?
He shrugs. You're not wearing your ring anymore. And come on, you're obviously running away from something. I've never seen anyone so panicked.
He looks me in the eyes.
You're pretty easy to read, Kelly. I don't need to be psychic.
I take a deep breath, steadying myself by clutching the desk. Maybe he's right. Maybe I'm overreacting to something that was obviously a performance. Maybe I told Greta my name without realizing it. It's certainly something I could have done unconsciously. Okay, I say. I guess I'll wait for the plow. He nods.
That's a good idea. I promise I'll call you as soon as they get here.
Okay. Thanks. I take another deep breath. I appreciate your kindness.
You're going to be okay.
He reaches out and puts his hand on mine. His fingers are a little rough and calloused, unlike Derek's baby smooth skin. For a moment, a thrill goes through me. But then he pulls his hand away.
Just hang out upstairs. You'll be out of here before you know it.
I take my bag and trudge back up the stairs. Despite his reassurances, something is telling me I'm making a horrible mistake by staying here. Chapter 13. When I get back up to my room, there isn't much to do. Since I slept so horribly, I lie down on the bed and shut my eyes. Maybe I could get a bit of sleep in, so that I can drive all night long. After staying in one place for so long, I need to put some distance between me and my home. Fast. I drift in and out of sleep for a couple of hours. Every time I get into any sort of deep sleep, the image of Derek with the red stain spreading across his abdomen pops into my head. And then I'm wide awake. This will haunt me for the rest of my life. I wish I had my phone. If not to make a call, then at least to surf the web. You don't realize how much you depend on your phone for entertainment until it's gone. I wish I had at least brought a book. I open the top drawer of the dresser. The Bible is apparently the only book in this room. And it's not exactly easy reading. When I was younger, our parents used to make us go to church every Sunday. Claudia and I hated it. We would spend the entire time whispering to each other until our parents told us to be quiet. Maybe it will give me some comfort. Who knows? I crack open the Bible. I expect to see the familiar first words. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Instead, the entire first page is covered in red magic marker. Somebody has scribbled across the pages, "Get out now, whore!" I stare at the words, a prickling sensation in the back of my spine. I turn the page, and there it is again. The same words, written over and over. "Get out, get out, get out, get out!" I snap the Bible shut with shaking hands. Well, so much for getting comfort from the words of God. I wonder if those words were meant for me. I wonder if somebody saw me by my car with Nick and wanted to send me a message. I raise my eyes and look across at the house next door. The sun has gone down, and I can see that same light on the top window, and the silhouette of a woman staring out at me. Rosalie. But it couldn't have been her. Nick told me she can't even walk. She couldn't have come over here, climbed the stairs, unlocked the door to my room, scribbled in the Bible, then gone back home. It's impossible. Anyway, I need to calm down. The plow should be here soon, and then I'll get out of here. And never come back. In the meantime, I'll watch some TV. That should help. I turn on the television. Unlike yesterday, the picture is clear. There is another pretty blonde newscaster on the screen, talking about damage caused by the storm. Stupid storm. If that hadn't happened, I would have been out of here ages ago. But I am praying I still have more time. After all, it's only Saturday. It's entirely possible nobody will notice Derek is missing until Monday. In other news, the anchorwoman says, the body of 34-year-old Derek Alexander was found last night in his home. My chest turns to ice. What? The blonde anchorwoman keeps talking, but I can only focus on little pieces of what she's saying. And then, a second later, Deputy Scott Dwyer is on the screen. He doesn't look great. He looks like he hasn't gotten much more sleep than I have. Scott's mildly bloodshot brown eyes make contact with the camera lens as he recites the details of the case in a flat voice. Death is from apparent stab wounds. No forced entry. Attempting to locate wife Quinn Alexander for questioning. They found him. They found Derek dead, and now they're looking for me. And, according to the newscast, he was found last night. Probably the only reason the police aren't here already is because of the storm. Or maybe I got lucky, and they didn't see the sign for the Baxter Motel. Which means I don't have much time. Screw the snowplow. I'm getting out of here. I'll go wait in my car so I can take off as soon as it's clear to go. At the very least, I can't be hanging around this motel any longer. I grab my luggage, which is thankfully already packed. I shove my feet back in my sneakers, then I head out of the room, locking the door behind me. I walk over to the staircase, but before I can start descending, I hear voices coming from downstairs. Oh my God. It's the police. Chapter 14. I freeze. I'm not sure what else to do. I want to go back to my room and lock and deadbolt the door, but I'm afraid to move. I knew the police were going to come looking for me, but I didn't think it would happen this quickly. Or at least, I was hoping it wouldn't happen this quickly.
This is your motel, Mr. Baxter?
A deep male voice is asking. I don't recognize the voice, but it's not Scott. If it were Scott, I might come out. Of course, he would arrest me anyway, but he'd be kind about it. He wouldn't make the handcuffs too tight.
Right, it's my motel.
Nick's voice.
I own it. Me and my wife. Does anyone else work here?
No, it's just me.
I see. Mr. Baxter, we're looking for a woman named Quinn Alexander, who we think may have stopped at your establishment in the last 24 hours. Does this photo look familiar to you?
I hold my breath. There's a long silence coming from downstairs. Oh, God, what am I going to do? Can I jump out the window? How badly would I be hurt? This is my own fault. I should have left while I had a chance. But where can I go? The plows still haven't come. I would be just as much of a sitting duck in my car as I am here. Although it's possible they might not see the car behind the diner. It's all over. The police are going to take me away. I'm going to spend the rest of my life in prison.
No,
Nick is saying.
Doesn't look familiar to me, sorry.
My breath catches in my throat. The officer's voice again.
Are you sure? She may have changed her hair. It might be shorter than in the photo.
Yeah, no, I haven't seen her. Honestly, we haven't had any new guests here in the last several days at all.
My shoulders sag. I can't believe it. Nick is covering for me. He's lying to the police on my behalf. He's risking everything to help me, even though he doesn't even know who I am.
Okay, then,
the officer says.
You mentioned your wife also works here. Could we talk to her as well? Maybe she saw Mrs. Alexander.
Unfortunately,
Nick says,
my wife has been very sick recently. She's been in bed the last week. I think it's the flu. You probably don't want to go near her. The officer chuckles.
I don't suppose I do. All right, then. You'll let us know if she shows up?
Oh, absolutely.
Thank you, Mr. Baxter. Appreciate it.
Sorry I couldn't be more helpful.
He pauses.
I hope you find her.
Oh, we will. It's just a matter of time.
I lean against the wall, my heart pounding. I can't believe that just happened. The police showed up here just as I feared they would, but somehow I'm not being carried off in handcuffs. Nick covered for me. But that doesn't mean I'm home free. I wait until I hear the door to the motel slam shut, then I run back to my room. I look out the window. It's very dark out now, but I can make out the police officer getting into his vehicle. I watch as he starts up his car and drives off. And there's one other thing I see. The plow is here. It's plowing away a path to freedom. That must be how the police car got here. In about 15 minutes, I may be able to finally leave. And then I hear a knock at the door.
It's Nick.
I walk over to the door and crack it open. Nick is standing there, wringing his hands together. I have the irrepressible urge to reach out and hug him.
Can I come in?
He asks. I step aside and he enters my room, closing the door behind him. The fleeting thought occurs to me that maybe this wasn't entirely altruistic on his part. Maybe he's here to ask me for money. Give me $500 or else I'm going to the police. Except I don't really think that. He doesn't seem like the type. After all, he didn't even ask for money for the meals he made me.
You heard that, right?
He says.
The police? Looking for you?
I nod slowly. Yes, I... Thank you. I don't know how I can ever repay you. He smiles crookedly.
I bet the guy had it coming.
I drop my eyes. He did. I promise you he did.
Yeah, I saw those bruises on your neck. Anyway, I just...
I'll be okay. Really.
Okay, then.
He glances out the window.
The plow arrived just before the police came, so in another 15 minutes or so, you should be good to go.
I nod again. I don't think I can talk because I'm going to start crying. Nick wrings his hands together.
I don't know where you're going. It's better if I don't know. But is there anything you need? Anything I can do to help?
Don't cry. Don't cry. No. Thank you. He looks over at the fur-lined boots I wore earlier today. It almost feels like a million years ago.
You should keep the boots, really.
Well, that did it. Now I'm sobbing. I sink down onto the bed, my shoulders shaking as the tears pour down my cheeks. Nick looks a little panicked, but he sits down next to me and rubs my back.
Hey,
he says.
It's okay. I promise. It's going to be okay. I won't tell anyone. Greta won't either.
I know. I wipe my eyes with the back of my hand. It's hard to leave everything behind, and you're so kind to me.
I'm just trying to help,
he says softly. I know, but I take a shaky breath. When you've lived with somebody for so long who spends every waking moment plotting how to be cruel to you, he frowns.
I'm so sorry, Quinn.
He's calling me by my real name now, which he knows because of the police. The unfairness of it all hits me. Why couldn't I have married a good guy like Nick? Why did I have to vow to spend my life with a narcissistic sociopath? I look up into his brown eyes with my red, swollen ones. The kindness and concern in his eyes almost floors me, and before I entirely know what I'm doing, I lean forward and I press my lips against his. Chapter 15. The kiss is over almost before it's begun. A split second after my lips make contact with his, Nick jumps away from me like I've just scalded him. He's staring at me.
his eyes wide. Jesus Christ, Gwyn! What are you doing? I never should have done that. What a horrible mistake.
All the kindness and concern has disappeared from his face.
I'm so sorry.
I'm married.
As he says the words, he glances out the window at his own house across the way. At that one glowing light.
I love my wife, okay? Jesus Christ, what were you thinking?
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to.
You've got to leave.
He rakes a hand through his hair.
You've got to get out of here now.
Listen, the boots.
Take the boots,
he says through his teeth.
I don't care about the fucking boots, okay? You've got to go, though. I covered for you with the police. Now you have to go.
He backs up against the door.
Please.
Yes, of course, I say stiffly. I'll go now, as soon as the plow is done, okay? I don't want to make trouble for you.
Right.
His hand grips the doorknob behind him.
Then don't.
With those words, he yanks the door open and gets the hell out of my room. I didn't think it was possible, but I feel even worse than I did 5 minutes ago. What was I thinking? The poor guy was just trying to help me, and then I launched myself at him. As he pointed out to me, he's married. All those years, I blamed Derek for cheating on me, and look what I did when I had the chance. I kissed another woman's husband. And not just another woman. A woman who is ill, who is counting on him to take care of her, who can't fight back. I am a horrible person. I deserve everything coming to me. I look back up through the window. That light is still on in the other house. Rosalie Baxter is sitting where she always does, watching. She must have seen everything. No wonder Nick was so freaked out. I want to tell her I'm sorry, that it was entirely my fault, not her husband's. He was only trying to be a good guy. I just don't have much experience with good guys lately. But there's no way for me to apologize. I'm not about to go over there and have a heart-to-heart with the woman. The best thing is to do what Nick said. Get out. I look down at the snow between the motel and the house. I see Nick in his black coat walking across the cleared path. He's going over to talk to her, probably to apologize. God, I feel terrible. All I can do now is sit there and wait for the stupid plow to be done. I can hear it making noises as it scoops the snow away. If only it hadn't snowed like this, I would be hundreds of miles away by now in a remote location in Canada. Instead, I'm trapped here. The police will be on the lookout for my license plate. By now, I should have swapped it out already. I choke back another sob. There's no way I'm getting out of here. I'm too close to home, and the police are going to find me. If not in the next few hours, than in the next few days. I don't know how to get a phony ID, and I don't know how I'm going to make more money if I don't have an ID. This is all going to explode in my face very quickly. Running away was the wrong thing to do. I wasn't prepared, and I'm not built for it. My best chance is to go back, fess up to what I did. Nick noticed the bruises on my neck. When the police see them, maybe they'll believe my story. And if I go back, Claudia will